this is Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Here is the June 22nd HMA conference call. We've got Richard on the line, Dave Flannery, Paul Flood, and a number of other consultants where we're going to answer your questions about your marketing consulting practice. This conference call is 1 hour, and I hope it helps you out in your consulting practice. Let's get going. All right, we're going to get going. I want to welcome everybody to the June 22nd HMA conference call. And anyone on the call, I want to let you know we're going to record this call, and it'll be going up on the HMA University. I want to welcome a few new HMA consultants. We've got a gentleman out of the UK. His name is David Coker. He may not be on the line right now, but he's a new HMA consultant. I want to welcome David. Also, we have a gentleman named Tiger Tim. He likes to be called. His name is Timothy Perry, and he's out of Wadsworth, Ohio. I want to welcome Tiger Tim. Also, we've got Timothy King, and he's out of Illinois. I want to welcome Timothy as well. I've got some announcements about some new recordings. Even though we haven't had a conference call in some time, I assure you I've been very busy. Some of this may be repeat for some people who've been actively going to the HMA University, but I want to cover some of the new recordings that we're in the process of editing and that will be on the HMA University very shortly, as well as some of the most recent interviews that are on the HMA University in various areas. First, we just did another interview with David Flannery. It's part 5, and we caught up with Dave to try and see what he's been up to, and you'll hear some exciting news on that recording, how he's been offered a very large position to be their main marketing consultant. We're going to talk a little bit about that today, and he's here with us to answer some questions about that situation. So we go into detail of what Dave's been up to, part 5. Also, just 2 days ago, Paul Flood and I had a chance to catch up, and Paul's got new clients, and we went over how he was able to get those new clients and any of the new lessons learned in his HMA consulting journey. And we also did a call with Rob Henshaw out of Traverse City, Michigan, and we went over some of the new things he's been doing about new clients, some of the challenges he's been having as well. Always some great learning lessons talking to Rob. I also did an hour-long recording with a new consultant, Joseph Ratliff, and Joseph is a copywriter, and he's been copywriting for a number of years, and he's got some very effective ways in getting copywriting clients, and I think if you haven't listened to this interview, that is up there on the HMA University, you definitely want to hear because they're perfectly translatable to your HMA practice. I had the pleasure and very fortunate being able to interview Tom Hopkins, the sales guru, and that interview is up at the HMA University. Also, Dave had sent me some information about Sandler Sales, and I've heard of Sandler Sales. They basically are a franchise operation that sells selling franchises, and they mainly focus on sales training. And I was able to hook up with one of the partners there, and we did a two-part recording interview all related to selling and sales training. And we totally based it here, me keeping in mind the consultants trying to get new clients. So we have a lot of actual scripts that you can use. They claim they have a cold calling program that gets an ungodly amount of appointments booked. And this guy has a tremendous amount of advice that is definitely directly applicable for your HMA consulting business. So make sure you listen to both those interviews. I do talk about his opportunity, and you've got to understand when I do these interviews, these people, they're very busy, and I have to plug what they're doing. Otherwise, there's really no reason for them to get me an interview. But I'm not promoting Sandler Sales franchises or anything, and if that's something you're interested in, there is information to contact them, but I'm not in on any kind of joint venture deal selling franchises. It was just a way to get a real good detailed interview from this guy. Kevin Hogan is an expert in body language. Dave turned me on to this guy, and he's an NLP guy, but a lot of experience in reading body language, which can help you when you're meeting your clients face-to-face. Really interesting, and an opening information on that recording is how to know for absolute sure if the opposite sex is interested in you. So make sure you listen to that one. Some great tips on where to sit when you're meeting with clients. Really good information on that. Also, many of you may have heard the Jim Camp interview on negotiating. This guy is really amazing. I've listened to this interview probably 10 times already, and he takes a total totally new approach on negotiating. We're totally talking about the HMA consultants, getting clients a lot of advice on how to negotiate getting consulting deals, even from the opportunity analysis to actually coming to pricing on there. A lot of great insightful advice from a true expert. This guy consults with governments all over the world, very high-end, multi-million dollar clients, and I got almost 2 hours from him. Make sure you listen to that. Also, another interview I'm just finishing the editing on. It's just a riveting story. It's with a guy named Bill Bartman, and this guy was a billionaire. He's got a compelling story. Just grew up on the wrong side of the tracks, across from a slaughterhouse. Just tough teenage years, super persistent in getting into the collection industry, collections, and the company earned $1 billion. He had a partner that was stealing from him. Partner had 57 counts against him. Unbelievable story. The guy never went to jail, but lost it all and is now on his way back, actually doing speaking and working with high school kids all over the country. But it's just a riveting story. You definitely want to hear that, and that'll be up shortly. Three more here. John Abdo. I don't know if anyone's heard of, in the U.S., the Abdoer. It's a piece of exercise equipment for strengthening your abdominal and your midsection. He sold over $500 million worth of these things through television infomercials. And some of these interviews are turning into super interviews. We have 3 hours with this guy, from his humble beginnings to his dream to developing and creating this idea from parts from the Home Depot to getting it patented, licensed, and literally mortgaging the farm to get this thing going, but came out winning on the other end. And you'll hear all his trials and tribulations and lessons learned about the television infomercial industry and on licensing. So there's a lot of stuff. You never know. You may have a client that's in this, but certainly you can learn from this experience. 3 hour interview. And then for anyone who's into the motivational stuff, I don't know if anyone's heard of the famous movie and book called The Secret. This was one of the guys in the actual movie, Dr. D. Martini. And he's been in the health and wellness industry for many years. Really sharp guy. Travels the world. Speaks almost 300 to 350 times a year. And he had a lot of great stuff to say. And then finally, you've seen up there on the HMA University, there's a guerrilla internet marketing course that I produce with Nick Gilbert. He's actually the guy who hosts my websites, and he is a marketing genius when it comes to online. You know, I don't want to say he's a geek, but this guy really spends a lot of time online, understanding web servers, understanding emails and all this. And he put together a very complete internet marketing course that if you're working with any clients online, and that's their focus, I negotiated where the HMA consultants get this course for free. All the recordings are up there. We'll have the transcripts. They're done, but those will be up there shortly. But I would definitely take advantage of this course. And certainly, if you're running a website business, there's some great information that you won't find anywhere else. I want to welcome Richard Johnson. Richard, thanks for being on the call.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And Dave Flannery, thank you. And
no problem at all.
And Paul Flood and everyone else. Now, Richard, I know you've been quite busy licensing your 21st century marketing system to MEPs all around the country. How's that going?
Good. There are 50 manufacturing extension partnerships. I just gave 2 workshops at their national conference gathering in Florida this last month. And so all 50 centers were gathered there, and we taught them about lean marketing.
What is lean marketing?
Can anyone tell anyone on the group what lean manufacturing is? Is anybody familiar with lean manufacturing?
I know the concept, but I couldn't give a detailed description.
Well, manufacturers have for so long offered lean manufacturing, the consulting companies out there, to manufacturers. And what that is it goes into a manufacturing facility to make sure that all of the processes do not have any waste, make sure all of the processes on the floor and in the machines is all efficient, so that the product is getting to the customer as efficiently and as quickly as the customer wants, so that the inventory is at a minimum and we have a very efficient running manufacturing process. That's called lean manufacturing. Well, what we've been learning over the last couple of years is that the HMA system is a lean marketing system. That means that you are going to also eliminate waste in a company's marketing processes. You are going to go in and create efficiencies without spending more money. So you are creating a lean marketing system by implementing the HMA system. So if you're looking to work at all with manufacturers, that's a powerful introduction because they're familiar with lean manufacturing. And what they don't want you doing is going in and asking them to spend a lot more money when they have in the past and they're frustrated with that. And so you come across with a unique selling proposition that says, you know, we're just not going to have to do that because we're going to make your marketing as lean as your manufacturing. And they immediately know what you're talking about. So that's a great insight that we've been working on the last couple of years, and that was all of the workshop in Orlando for the National MEP Conference. Another concept that is coming on I want to share. Is anybody familiar with Eureka out of Ohio?
What's the name? Doug Hall?
Yeah, Doug Hall.
The name sounds familiar. Who is he?
He's a inventor. He's an innovator from an invention. I think he was even on part of that American...
Oh, yeah, Doug Hall. He was one of the hosts on American Inventor last year.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, he has a firm called Eureka in Ohio, and he's got a book out called Jumpstart Your Business Brain. In his book, he says that if you will have an overt benefit, which is a USP, and execute it and implement it, basically steps one and two of the HMA system, you'll have a 45% growth in business. So his book just validates everything regarding the HMA system. So if you want to get that book, it's called Jumpstart Your Business Brain by Doug Hall, founder of the Eureka Ranch.
Yeah, he has a ranch where he has a think tank that he brings these inventions in, and they brainstorm. This guy's a real serious player in the invention world in marketing.
The reason he was a speaker down there is the MEP, the manufacturers, are all worried about innovation and how to beat the Chinese and other innovators, the Japanese. And let me just say to everyone here regarding the first step of the HMA system, the USP, is many of your manufacturers are worried about product innovation or service innovation. Well, the USP can be what we call demand innovation. And basically what you're doing is you are changing the demand of the market for the product. So let me give you an example. We worked with a client that does these clips for putting siding cable on the side of a house if you're installing any cable. And we did the USP, and he was having a problem because everyone was buying cable clips from him and wanted the lowest price. But your manufacturer's number one problem is a pricing problem. They're all losing margin, and they're all frustrated. So what you need to do is create value for them so they don't have to compete on price. And one way you do it is what we call demand innovation. So when we did the USP for this client, we came back and said, no, you don't sell cable clips anymore. You sell easy clips. They're easier to install. They're easier to maintain. They're easy to order. That created a 300% increase in 60 days in business for this company. And let me tell you, so what's changed? What did we innovate? Who can tell us what we innovated?
Demand?
That's right. Instead of demanding clips, we taught the market to demand easy. You innovated the demand. So you need to know that's what you can do with this USP. Now, it may not always be the case that you innovate demand.
How would you word it in words?
You would call it demand innovation. That's what you would call it. And you would say, I'm changing the nature of the demand of the market for my product. Domino's did it 20 years ago. What demand did they innovate?
Delivery.
That's right. Instead of wanting pizza, they taught us that we wanted speed. So their USP innovated demand. So if you've got clients that are wanting to stay at the top of the heap in innovation, but most of them don't have the money to do the R&D and do innovation in products or services, you come along and say, you know, I think we might be able to create some exciting innovation without costing you any money. And I'm going to do it by this first step called a USP.
That's good.
That was the theme of this manufacturing presentation just last month down in Orlando, is that we're helping these manufacturers that are smaller manufacturers have no money to compete with the big boys in R&D and innovating their products. And so demand innovation is something you can help them with, and it doesn't cost them any money. Any questions on that?
This is Paul Richard. I have a new client that sells an odor product that's mentally friendly, and they've been selling it to cat owners and real estate companies to not much success, so they've asked me to come and help them, and that's an exciting approach.
What you got to do, Paul, is we don't sell this odor anymore, and you got to figure out what it is you could sell differently and teach the market that that's what they really want. If you're working at all with manufacturers or any company that is wanting to get serious about innovation, this is one way to do it.
Okay, let me interject. I want to stimulate a dialogue between Dave Flannery and you, Richard. Dave, why don't you explain just briefly to Richard what happened when you met with that recycling client and how they've offered you not a full-time position but a larger position? Because, Richard, this happened to you in your consulting practice when you went to a standard client and you end up working for the company. And then maybe there's some advice that, Richard, you learned during that process that you could give to Dave because he's just now getting into it. So, Dave, explain briefly what happened to you with that and what you're doing, and then, Richard, maybe you have some feedback, because this is surely going to happen to other consultants down the road, and maybe we can learn from this experience.
Sure. It's a recycling company that's a national company at the moment, and I'd gone in and I was there for about 2 or 3 weeks, and they came to me and said, look, we're a national company, we want to go international, and by international they mean the States, Europe, and as far away as Russia. And they said, we want you to do the marketing and PR for us. So I negotiated a €30,000 retainer on top of the fees for each of the steps, and kind of negotiated that I work my own time. Nothing really changed in the way I worked towards it, just that I will be spending more time with them. And if it's happened to you, any advice you give me would be fantastic.
Well, have you negotiated the contract and signed the contract?
Yeah. It's my contract. My lawyer, my attorney, set it up, and it's all kind of skewed towards me.
Yeah. How long have you worked with this company?
About 6 weeks, I would say.
Okay. Well, I'm sure you probably got it taken care of in your contract, but I would have, and I should have, in my arrangements. I had two clients that wallowed me up as far as time, and they invited me in-house, much like you're doing there now.
Mm-hmm.
If you're able to keep it separate and distant, that's good. So I commend you on that, because I would recommend that. The other thing is, maybe you would have gone 4 or 5 steps with them to build more of a trust level and get to know them a little better, and they get to know you. I should have done that. I shouldn't have wrapped in so close at the beginning with my clients, and should have gone a few months to work out a better deal. So that might be the only thing, is to watch it. If you've got some good outs, can you leave any time?
I can walk away, and the retainer is non-refundable, and the only thing I would lose on would be the contingency at the very end of the year. But that wouldn't bother me if I thought I was getting a raw deal. I was very cognizant of the time issue, because I don't want to be in a company. I want to work for myself, and I'm cognizant of losing clients and kind of having my business fall apart while building theirs.
Yeah, but see, mine did. My consulting really kind of fell apart.
I have it written into my contract where I turn up when I think I should have to turn up. They don't call me and say to me, where am I? I turn up when I think I have something to do or something to say.
Well, that's good. If you've got that kind of flexibility, that's a better deal. And so all of the HMA consultants, I would just say it will happen. You'll get invited by clients to come and spend more time with them. I get bored. It just happened with me with these two clients. In 6 weeks, I was done, and I was bored. I said, okay, what do you want me to do next?
Yeah, you see, the thing with the system is that you as a consultant control the timeline.
That's right.
So, to be honest, if a company brought some of Richard's experience, I'm sure Richard could do it all in a month if he had the time. But to be truthful, basically, you're controlling the timeline, and therefore you're controlling the client's expectation of you.
Yeah.
And if Richard's back was against the wall, that he could do the whole system in 1 month and get results. And that's what happened, I would venture, Richard, when you went in there. You went through the system, you got it done really fast, and then there's nothing else left to do.
Yeah. And yet I had kind of yielded too much control to the client.
You'd be the marketing director.
Yeah, you're just become a marketing director.
Yeah, and I don't want that to happen to me.
So it depends, I guess, on everyone's personal goals. But, of course, Dave's and mine in these situations was to continue building a consulting practice.
Yeah.
And so if that's the number one goal, you got to be careful and not yield too much control over to the client.
You protect yourself accordingly.
Yeah, so those are some key advices, Michael.
Thanks for that. A question for Paul. Paul, as we talked during our interview, you had mentioned that Dave's interviews had really kind of kicked you in the butt to make you realize that you should be your number one client. And you started doing that. And I wanted you to explain to the HMA consultants what differences you've seen since you started becoming your number one client. And maybe you could talk about your newsletter and any kind of results directly from that newsletter as an example.
Yeah, really I started to systematize my own marketing system instead of just taking it haphazardly day by day. So, okay, what is the next best thing to do? So, Dave, once again, you kicked me in the ass, and I thank you for that one.
No problem at all.
That helped a lot, but...
Paul, how'd that feel?
Well, it felt bad in my ass, but good in my wallet. Okay.
I should have asked for a percentage.
I did things like started the regular newsletter, which I have already gotten a referral from it, and she's getting back to me and said this is the exact, it's a PR person who I met at a Internet Marketing Association meeting. She signed up for my newsletter, and about a week later, she called me and said, I've been getting your newsletter, I watched your online seminar, and I have a very good referral for you. That was very exciting for me. Another one is just making sure I'm keeping in touch with all of the prospects and clients, and that is through greeting cards, through my newsletter, through my e-newsletter. That has been very, very significant. I've created, but I haven't mailed out yet, two joint venture letters with a couple of people I know who are going to send endorsements to their clients for me. And I've really just integrated the whole concept into it. So when people are looking at what I'm doing and they're saying, you're making me a believer in what you're doing, can you do that for me? And that's it. They're now coming to me. And actually, when I got back from the hospital this morning from the surgery with my wife, I have another email from a guy who has been receiving my newsletter and said, we need to talk. Can I take you out to breakfast in the next week or two?
Excellent.
That's great.
Can I just say one thing? It's another tiny bit of advice if you want to take it. I use it and it's worked for me. It might work for you and the rest of the HMA consultants. Do you work with a handshake or do you work with a contract?
I go on a handshake, but I give them a set of deliverables written down as what I will do on each step.
Set of deliverables, right? What I would urge you to do is, and this is to stop you having to rely on what I call the externals, your newsletter and things like that and your postcards, is make it a stipulation that they have to give you 5 referrals if they want to work with you. The way I work it is, it's a stipulation that if I'm hired, that they will give me 5 referrals. 2 of those referrals come within the first 8 weeks, and the last 3 come then between that time and the end of the contract. So what you're doing is, while you're working for that client is actually building your business for you. And what you've done is, you've made it part of your contract, so that there's no feeling awkward at the end of the contract, kind of asking for a referral and thinking, should you ask for a referral and whatever else. And number 2 then, because it's a referral, the barrier of trust is broken. So it's easier for you to sell. And number 3 is, because people of a business class kind of flock together, if your client is a high-caliber client, then the clients you get off them will be high-caliber clients. And then it kind of goes in a circle. You're building your business as you're building somebody else's business, rather than the reverse of it, where you're building somebody's business and you're spending so much time with them that your business collapses, which is what you don't want. Now, it's a small thing. I've done it, and it's worked for me, so I just share that, pass it out in the hope it might have worked for somebody else.
I like that approach of writing out the expectations, because there is a referral system that I am starting by going in and saying part of my compensation. Actually, I started working with my attorney, and I did tell him that part of my compensation is I'm expecting at least 3 referrals from him, but I did not give a timeline, which that would have helped a great deal.
Yeah, you see, I actually went with a year first. My first original contract had a year, but then I was sitting down one day and I said, that's too long. So what I did was I halved it. I put 2 at 8 weeks. Now, it's going to take 8 weeks before your client will go to bat for you, really. It'll take that. But after that 8 weeks, then, they have enough knowledge of you to be able to go to a business associate or a friend or whatever and go to bat for you, really, go out, give you good points and why they should talk to you and whatever else. Now, this is all based on the fact that you're doing a good job for your client. If you're not doing a good job for your client, there's no point in asking for referrals, because you just say no. Like I said, it's a small thing, but the one thing you don't want to do is be so engrossed in helping your client that you forget that you're in business too. So that's my way of automating my own business growth. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
I'd like to add to that. I know, Richard, you're familiar with this, and Dave, you may be as well, in Jay Abraham's material, the interview or the information with Patty Lund, the dentist out of Australia. When he does that, he even states specifically that the referral must be of equal caliber or higher caliber than yourself. So you can even stipulate the caliber and the type of referral. And that's all in his upfront contract before he takes on a client as a patient.
The big thing I find, well, I haven't found, but I've heard and I've read about referrals, is the fact of the awkwardness of going to somebody at the end of a contract and asking for a referral. And there's books written about it, how to ask for referrals and things like that. And I said, well, why ask for it? Just make it a stipulation at the start. So you're upfront with your client. Now, if your client points it out and it's not comfortable with it, compromise a little bit. If he only wants to give you 3 referrals and only one comes after 8 weeks, well, that's fine. I wouldn't compromise, but you'd have to kind of gauge that based on the situation your business is in at the moment. I would say some things like that, like I'll throw it out and I'll say I won't compromise. That's because I'm in a good position at the moment. That doesn't mean that if it all fell apart next year that I wouldn't compromise. So the only time I would ask you to kind of do what I do is if your business is in the same position. I don't want people who are kind of back up against the wall following my advice of no compromise just because they think it's good advice and that's what I'm doing. If I was in a different situation, yes, I would definitely compromise. And again, it's your own gut feeling. You know what sort of state your business is in, what kind of state your bank account is in. And if you need the business, take the business. I mean, it's all about compromise. But I would put it in. I mean, like I said, you have to look after yourself as well. Let me put it this way. At the end of a contract, you grow your client's business by 60 to 100%. Fantastic. And he puts money in the bank. Great. You turn around and your business is falling apart. That business owner is not going to give you any money. The only help that business owner can give you is a referral. And if he's not expecting to be asked for a referral, he won't give you one. Then if you feel awkward going to him, you probably won't go to him. But just bring it up. And as Richard has always said, and I've always said, be upfront with the client. The more the client knows what to expect, the easier it is for you.
That's great. I've got a question here from David Coker. He's a new HMA consultant, and it's a question I'm going to pose to Richard and David and Paul, so we'll get 3 different answers from it. My question is, the USP for the HMA system is to grow the business by 25% to 100% in 60 to 90 days. How does this work in practice, as the first 4 projects will take longer than this to implement, 4 months or 120 days? Do other HMA consultants have a problem with this guarantee, or how do they explain it? Dave Coker. Richard?
Well, I would, as a consultant, make the 60 to 90 days a variable. You want to put that in there, A, if you could see it happening in the first 2 steps. If there's going to be an increase, it can happen after step 2, and that's getting a good USP and getting it integrated and communicated consistently throughout their current marketing can have a 45 to 100% increase in business. I've seen it, and it can happen in that 60 to 90 day period. So you've got to be careful, though. I mean, there may be clients it's going to take longer than that. And that's why the guarantee might be 25 to 100% in 6 months or 8 months or 6 months following the completion of the system. And so I wouldn't make that 60 to 90 days such a hard, fast rule on every prospect.
Okay. Dave, your USP is grow your business 20% in 20 days. How do you handle that in relationship to this question?
Yeah, I would agree with Richard. What you have to understand is when you're given a USP like that, it has to be, like when I go into a client and I do a differential analysis or an opportunity analysis, the information that I get from that will tell me if I'm able to do what I say I can do.
That's right.
Now, based on that information, I would tell them, look, I won't be able to do 20% in 20 days. This is what I'm going to be able to do based on the information that you've given me. Now, they either accept that or they don't accept that. If they do accept it, you can talk about it. If they don't, well, then they don't and you move on. But like I said, a USP is there to get people in. It's not a lie. I mean, I have done it 20% in 20 days. But you have to be upfront with a client. It's an individually based thing based on individual clients. Let me put it this way. If you go in and say, let's say it's 20% in 20 days in my case, and I find they have a fantastic USP, there's nothing I can do with it. Fine, okay. And I go in and I see they have absolutely no sales training. There's no sales system, there's no sales anything. If I can think that I can get in there and I can train the people to sell, then yes, I might think, because that is a major, major flaw and a major hidden asset and a major opportunity, based on the caliber of people that he has working for him, I may be able to do 20% in 20 days. Again, it's based on the caliber of the people, it's based on their actions. What I'm trying to say is it's going to be based on the information you get from a client. The USP in general is 20% in 20 days or 60 to 100% in 60 to 90 days. That's a generalization. There is no way any consultant could do that for every single client he's ever going to have, because clients are going to be in different stages. Would you agree with that, Richard?
Absolutely.
Paul, how about you? Anything on that?
I say in as little as 60 to 90 days. So I do have that cushion, and it is the same thing. There are other people that I've gone to, and I've said, I can't help you. You're doing everything that I would do. Remember that hair salon I told you about, Michael?
Yes.
I said, you're doing everything that I would do. I can't get these kinds of results, and it would sort of be a waste of my time and your money for me to come in and try to do anything for you. So I want to be upfront and honest with them. And other types of firms, like looking to start up with two architects at the end of this month, and the nature of their product and project cycle is such that that type of close typically isn't going to happen for them within a 60 to 90 day period, just because
you could have a year long close.
Yeah, so that's the nature of the bid cycle, and they're aware of that. But then as I talk about other things during the opportunity analysis, and even talking about things like joint ventures and saying to the architect, well, could you see, as you brought in the blacktoppers and the window cleaners and landscapers, and you're making commission off of every one of them, now can you see how you can start going back to existing projects and take on these as additional revenue streams? And they're nodding their heads with that. And also, I did learn from what David said as one of his mistakes is that when starting off on the USP project, I'm also having the customer start on their end to collect the demographic and psychographic information on their clients, so they are immediately trying to establish a stronger rapport with their clients. So when we start getting into the sales training and then the database, we have a lot to run with immediately. So those factors are definitely there, particularly like what David just said with sales training. If you teach somebody how to sell and how to close that's never done it before, there's an immediate impact there.
Oh, yeah.
Cross-selling, upselling, and looking for those types of opportunities. And if it's the nature that there is no cross-sell or upsell, are there back-end products that could be added within a given time frame? But those few factors make me very, very comfortable in guaranteeing it, because I've done it. I've seen the results. To whoever wrote that, work the system in your clients and do it for yourself. I saw it for myself, and you'll see it for yourself, is when you do it for a client, it works. The system does work. It's been proven so long, and I use elements of it in my previous careers, and they always work, but now it's systematized. It's working better.
Okay, thanks for that. I've got another question from Joseph Ratliff. Here's my question for Richard. I'm planning on continuing my consulting practice by coaching internet marketers in small businesses that want to expand their business to the web properly. I would like your insight on creating low-dollar, mid-dollar, and higher-dollar products that I could sell for those that cannot afford the $12,000 to $25,000 for the steps.
Okay, what is available to all of the HMA is the seven-step system and the eighth bonus step on internet marketing. We have those now available in manual form so that you could offer it at a lower price. And they could do a self-study, or you could take them through in a group situation. And we're still about, probably 45, 90 days away from getting a 5-hour video online course that you'll all be able to resell to clients. It has me going through all of the steps with the workbooks, and they could take that online as a web course. So the manuals and the web course are available to all HMA consultants to offer to clients who can't pay the one-on-one fees. So you would purchase them wholesale through Michael, then include them in the retail price of your courses and your training. So that's how I would offer this to those clients.
Also, he could package his services, and instead of just selling steps, he could sell 30-minute consultations by phone.
Sure. He could go in a half a day for $500, create a whole system for them, and just go through all of the eight steps and say, here's what you should do, step one, step two, step three, step four, and I've given you a marketing system, and that's $500.
Really what they're buying when they're paying for the one-on-one consultations from myself, Richard, or any HMA consultant is our expertise and our execution skills.
That's right.
And most of that would be execution skills because we know how to execute. And
right.
That's the main skill we bring to the board. So, like, when you take the execution out of it, the price can drop.
That's right. And that's what these other tools are for, is you can package it any way you need to meet the financial capacity of your client.
Yeah. It's your company. You're the one who's in charge of your time, how you use your resources, and your resources include your execution skills, your value that you bring to the customer. I mean, you can package it any way you want.
Yeah, that's a great point, Dave.
No limitations.
Yeah. HMA consultants need to understand that the system is to be manipulated and packaged by you in any way. Don't let the system become too rigid to where you're passing up deals. You mean you can't pay me $2,000 and you can't do it once a month? Oh, dear, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah,
don't let that happen.
Exactly.
Good advice. Who else is on the line with us? Anyone else that we haven't heard from?
Yeah, Tim Armstrong.
Hey, Tim, how are you?
Good, real good. I'd like to ask a question.
Sure.
I'm working with a bicycle shop now. I'm in Michigan, so we have pretty much four seasons here, and they do a lot of business in the summer. And I'm just wondering, how do I work with them when their busy time is now, and I start working them into the fall? How can I work with them and guarantee our performance? How can I increase their sales during the off-season so that we can guarantee our performance?
I think their auxiliary products and cross-selling products and opportunities, and also I have a travel background, a place like that saying, can you do tours to other areas of the country? That was just a single tactical approach, an idea on something like that, is that what else can you offer that could create value for the clients to come into you during the less than peak seasons? Because the people who are serious bikers and athletes are doing that. They're looking for places all over the country and all over the world to do it throughout the year.
That's a good idea. Can you tell me a little bit more about the seasons? Are they selling bicycles, or are they actually renting the bicycles for tours and stuff?
They're selling them.
They're selling the bikes.
Right. They have occasional little tours they do, and once a week bicycle rides that they take for like 20, 25 miles. And they do that like once a week during the summer, maybe a little bit in the fall, but I don't know about the winter months.
Well, okay, the summertime is their peak time.
Right.
So that is the time you need to be thinking about building the business for winter.
Right.
And the way you do that is very simple. One very simple way is create a referral club. For everybody who buys a bike, you give them a referral card and you say, if you bring somebody into the shop within a certain amount of time or months, and I mean you can specify the months, okay, you'll go into a draw for a weekend away or a week away at a spa or something like that. Like for every person that comes into the shop during summertime, I want you to think of 10 people behind that customer. Because they're the 10 people that that customer could bring in for you for free or for the cost of a draw. Does that make sense?
Yes, I'm just wondering how that would increase your sales later.
Right. Let's say July would be the peak season month. Would that be correct?
Right.
Okay. Give me a down season month.
October, November.
Okay, let's pick October. So you do the October referral club. For everybody who buys in July and refers somebody to you in October, they go into a draw. And that draw takes place in January. And the first prize is a weekend away at Niagara Falls with their wife and family.
Okay. So everyone that they bring into the shop.
Everybody that they bring into the shop. Now, a caveat. The guy has to be able to sell his products. You're not going to say to a person, for every person you bring to the shop and make buy, what you have to do is you have to make sure this guy has good selling skills. That's where you come down in integration. This is where you have to teach this guy and show this guy how to sell his products. Or you do the winter referral club. For everybody who buys in July and refers you a person in the winter, they get into a draw for every person they refer. And for every customer that comes into that shop in July, I want you to think of 10 customers behind that customer. Because that is the amount of potential people, prospects that you could have coming in for free or for the cost of the first place of the draw. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You think that would work?
Yeah, that's worth a try, yeah.
But do you believe it would work?
Yeah.
Okay, you have to believe it would work. There's no point in doing it half-heartedly. I know it will work because I've done it. The only way you're going to increase that person's business is getting more people in and converting them to customers. That referral club will get the people in, but it's only the strength of the guys and the sales force in that shop that will increase the money in his bank account.
Okay.
That's where execution comes in now. So during June, July, and August, let's say the 3 months, not only are you building that business, but you're looking forward onto the down business.
Right.
Okay? And during June, July, and August, when there's a load of people around, that's when you're teaching him how to sell. Okay?
Right.
Because he can't afford not to be able to sell in October, November, December. And then what will happen is you'll get blamed for not doing your job.
Yeah.
Okay?
I'm afraid of.
This is key now. In the uptime, you're always looking to bring up the downtime. Are you going to bring it up as much as the peak season? No, you're not. I mean, all you're looking for is a 5 or 6 or 10% bump.
Okay?
Right.
Another idea that just crossed my mind, if you can find a ski shop or a winter-related retail business and you hook that owner up with, let's say you've got the owner of a ski shop and you've got the owner of a bike shop, both with opposite cycles for selling, and negotiate a deal where each one of them are endorsing each other's clients. The ski shop is endorsing all their ski customers to the bike shop, and the bike shop in trade endorses all the off-season bikers to the ski shop and just trade leads.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, step four of the system is the joint ventures and alliances, and I look at bike shops. I've gone whitewater rafting several times down at the New River and Gauley River in West Virginia, and they offer bike tours as well. So if you were to hook up, and I know there's whitewater around up where you are as well as into Pennsylvania and closer areas, where you find some of the whitewater rafting highly reputable companies and promote joint tours with them, and they'll pay you 10 or 15% or 20% on tours that you're selling for them. So you've got joint ventures and alliances established not only within your own geographic area, but there are other opportunities that you say, okay, what do my customers like to do? And that's in step two of the system, and three of the system, where they're going to be profiling, getting the demographic data on their customers, find out what the common likes are, and then see who else is selling that you could joint venture with.
Those are excellent ideas.
You want to give me a call sometime, Tim. I'm down in Cincinnati, and I've got 15 years in travel and tourism.
Okay, your name is Paul?
Paul Flood, yeah.
Paul, you can give your number if you want.
Okay, it's 513-829-6368.
Great, appreciate it, Paul.
Anyone else on with a question at all?
If you have time, can I ask one more question?
Yeah, go for it.
I'm working on a potential with an accountant right now, too. And I'm wondering, when I do an increase the average sale for an accountant, you know, he does, like, payroll and taxes. Does anybody have any ideas on how I can find some ways that they can increase their average sale during the year if they just do, like, pretty mundane things like payroll?
Well, Michael just interviewed a guy, a friend of mine, who's a tax attorney. And he has packages that he sells on saving taxes. Majority of your accountants are going in and saying, okay, I will do your accountants, but they're not acting as a tax advisor or consultant. And see, if he is acting as a tax advisor or consultant, he could do a couple of things I would see. And this is what's happened with mine, is because I told him that I wanted him to come to me with tax saving ideas based on what I've learned from somebody else. I said, I want you to tell me how I can save you money. And you might say to this accountant that they would regularly go to their clients and have more of a retainer type relationship in addition to the fees for doing the actual paperwork, but tax advice and acting more as a consultant and charging consulting fees in addition to just tax preparation.
You know, they do it verbally. They don't sell CDs or books,
right,
on a consulting basis.
Michael will post the interview. Once you hear this guy talk.
I forgot to mention this. That's right. His name is Ed Lyon, and we did a 70-minute question and answer all about saving money using deductions. He is good. It's a very easy interview to edit because he knew his stuff. Anyone listening to this, with or without children, when I get this up, there are some immediate things that everyone can do to slash their income tax bill. And then he had a PowerPoint presentation, which we did an audio to, and that runs about 80 minutes. So we're going to develop that in the articulate presenter, like that articulate presentation that Richard and I did, and that's all going to be synced up with slides. And then at the end, he sells his course for $300 that outlines everything that we talk about in easy to use tax saving strategies. You get, I think, an hour and a half consultation with him, and he'll also review 2 years back of your returns. So one of the most powerful things he talked about is you go look at your previous returns. He'll look at them, and he'll find you the ways where you could even get a refund from the IRS from deductions that you never chose to take. So it's not too late to implement these deductions, even from returns you've already filed, I think up to 2 or 3 years. Now, another thing I want to note, back to Joseph Ratliff's question in developing and packaging your services, I have my entire Audio Marketing Secrets product on the HMA University site, and that is powerful for doing interviews and developing and creating value using audio. In my opinion, there is no easier way. And so, for instance, your tax attorney, your financial planner, if you can get a digital recorder and do 2 or 3 hours audio interviews with him where he spills his guts on all his expertise and credentializes himself, you can put those on CDs that cost you $3, and you can increase the value of a product that at the same time can promote him and position him as an expert. And, you know, I would definitely take advantage and learn how to do audio interviews and create digital products that you can sell. Because once you have the audio, all you got to do is get a transcriber to transcribe it, and then you've got transcripts, audio, CD, and as you know, I love information products, and they're real easy to make. We'll conclude this June 22nd HMA conference call. I appreciate it. I think we covered some great stuff. I want to personally thank everyone for being on the call, especially David, Richard, Paul, and Tim, and John Strange, and anyone else who's on the call. And just keep doing it, and we'll keep you posted. Make sure you go back to the HMA University, to the first 10, last 10 page. That's where the unedited stuff is up there and the stuff in the works. And make sure you really dig through and find all the new content that we keep putting up there. And I appreciate everyone joining us.
Everybody.
That's the end of our June 22nd HMA training conference call. I hope this has been helpful. Please review previous conference calls and make sure you don't overlook any new content and recordings on the HMA University. Thanks for listening and go get them. Hi, it's Michael Senoff here with another bonus tip from Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. It's called an audio infomercial. Your audio infomercial, which I create for you, will sell more products of yours faster, easier, and for less cost than any conventional advertising method, and I guarantee it 100%. Imagine catching yourself at concert pitch talking about what makes your business or your product service unique, what makes it special. Imagine taking a professional recording of that perfect sales presentation that I create for you and giving it to your prospect as an audio CD or an internet download from your website. I can do this for you faster than you ever thought possible with my personalized audio informational recording service. If you're interested in this unique service, please contact me at michael@hardtofindseminars.com. In the subject line of your email, in all capitals, write audio infomercial, and I will get back with you with more information.